One of the advantages of talking right after two speakers is that if I face a problem in saying something or getting the point across, I can always say, like they said, and rely on them and make you look dumb for not connecting the dots. So I try not to do this. I'm also happy to note that, you know, the other two speakers talked about DOIs and data site. Handle system is a technology that enabled the DOIs. Handle system came from CNRI, the company I work for, so glad to note that. Today I'm going to talk about the types and type registries and its relevance to research data interoperability. I'm going to speak slightly at a different level than the other two speakers, partly because we have not implemented a type registry yet. We have implemented a prototype before that I'm not going to demonstrate today, but I'm going to talk about the kind of research that we plan to do in the next few months on type registries. So I'm going to take you through the thinking process of a type registry. Research data interoperability. We all know it's important. How do we achieve interoperability? Or what is interoperability? Research data, you know, there exists a lot of research data across the world produced in different time points as well as by different domains. So data sets, for example, could be construed as a research data. There are people who would want to use the research data. Some of those people might be responsible for producing the data in the first place, but there are users of this data sets. Presumably, there are also applications and systems that could actually access these data sets. Now, if you're part of the organization that produced the data sets in the first place, then you know where to go to. You can actually go there, you know, access the data sets and do whatever you want to do because your organization is part of the management there. However, if you're coming out from a different organization, then that's where the problem comes in. So the question is, you know, how do we deal with this interoperability problem? So usually the data sets would be managed in some kind of repositories. So the question is there a way that we can make these users from a different organization access these repositories? If not, then that becomes a firewall, right? You don't know where to go look for, or even if you know where to look for, do you have permissions and all kinds of stuff? So that's the problem of interoperability. Now, instead of looking at that as a problem, you can also look at that as an opportunity for technologists, especially guys like me who are, you know, very enthusiastic about, you know, solving technology-related problems, not policy-related problems yet, maybe later on in my future. So discovery is a problem and also an opportunity. Then comes the access. Once you find stuff, how do you access the actual material? Once you have access, can you actually interpret it, right? I mean, if you have access to research data and if you can't do anything about it because you don't know anything about it, then that's a problem. And once you've interpreted it, then I guess the idea is to reuse it. So those are the four things that I would call as something that would enable interoperability of research data, just laying out the context here. Now, I'm going to talk mostly about from the interpretation standpoint, not necessarily from a discovery standpoint. So as I was actually preparing these slides, my question was, the symposium is all about discovery, and I'm talking about this interpretation. How does that really help the audience? So in one of the discussions I had with Bob Kahn, his point was, Internet existed, but people realized that it existed with the help of, you know, applications like email. Even my mom understands that there is internet behind the scenes, you know. And I come from India, which means that you have to go down 50 years back from a U.S. standpoint. So my mom could understand that, you know, there is internet behind the scenes means that the value of any infrastructure is when you use it. So if you can't use the material that you have found access to, then there is no motivation for us to actually work towards the discovery problem. So that's how I connected the dots between what I'm going to say and how the symposium is meant to work. So if you can't do the connection, I apologize, but if you can do, good for me. Okay, so, you know, I talked about the four things, right? Discovery, access, interpretation, and reuse. From a discovery standpoint, you know, you can talk about a scientist from US wanted to discover some information created by this other researcher in Germany, right? I mean, that's a discovery problem, and if the scientist was able to find the information, then lo and behold, that's a success story. So that's one use case. The other use case is, once he discovered the information, can he actually reuse it or not? I'm saying the same things again, but the point is there is interpretation in between. And that's where the types and type registries play a significant role. Like I said, CNRI did work on the type registry problem for 2 years. We have actually devoted a couple of employees in a full-time scale to work on the type registry problem. And we learned quite a lot of lessons. So our definition of information types, not necessarily the ones that is scientifically acceptable yet, so I'm going to go through that. So the first point is I'm going to say what they are not. When we say information types, we are not talking about programmatic types. Right? We're not talking about strings or integers or floating points or double if you're into programming. I'm also not talking about MIME types per se, you know, although we would want to use as much of MIME types as possible for interpreting the data. We're not talking about that. Okay, so what am I talking about? I'm talking about types as identifiers, just strings, that have got some metadata that describes the types, and this metadata could be used by services to interpret the data. So this metadata is the key. That's the one that's holding, that's connecting the services and the data. So the question is, how can we actually come up with a metadata or metadata scope or schema that would help the society in creating these automatic service applications that could actually, you know, take the data, interpret it, and do some kinds of fancy stuff. But that's also true for MIME types, right? MIME types have got an identifier. They got a definition from a metadata standpoint, and those are used by applications. So how is information type that I'm talking about is any different than MIME types? Well, one distinction. I'm talking about information created for a scientific purpose. When observations are being made, usually you would not generate a single file. It may happen that, you know, the scientist ended up creating a single file. But usually it's multiple files, and these multiple files are distributed on the network. And each of the files... each of the files have got their own MIME types. So when I am talking about information, I'm actually talking about files spread on the internet, distributed within several repositories with all sorts of discovery problems and all of that stuff. So from a CNRI standpoint, we tend to think of this as a digital object. A digital object is a data structure that allows you to actually collect different pieces of information on the network together. Now the information types now correspond to digital objects at this, you know, whole holistic level, not at the individual file level. Now, you know, handle system came from CNRI, so we are big on identifiers and unique identifiers. So when we think about types, we are not actually putting any semantics in the types. We tend to think of them as identifiers, which are usually opaque. So, you know, types are identifiers which have some associated metadata, and this metadata is key for the services to actually process the information. That's the story. So, what is CNRI's role? CNRI's role is actually, our focus is to come up with infrastructure that would help create these type registries at a cross-domain level. We're not focusing on any given domain, but rather, you know, come up with infrastructure that's useful across multiple domains. Okay, so what's the value proposition of information types, right? So for me, when I tend to think of any problem, I wanted to actually come up with abstractions, right? Or generalizations about any particular problem. Not focus on a single problem, but actually focus on a set of problems that are related to each other. That would give me some kind of insight as to how to deal with problems, right? So grouping is something that types could actually accomplish. John Doe has created a digital object today, but Jane Smith has created a digital object 10 years ago. They are more or less have been working on the same kind of observations, so the data is presumably the same, or the data types are presumably the same. Then instead of focusing on a single digital object, with the help of types, if I know that they belong to the same type, then I can actually generalize all of that and tend to think of, you know, doing some good to the community by generalization. So grouping is something that would help me as a researcher. That's not at a technical level at all. That's at a human cognition level. Now, if you have done things right, if you have come up with a solid machine-readable metadata that can be associated with types, then services could be created that could automatically parse the information and do advanced stuff like we are talking about, you know, the correlations that were unforeseen before, or the trends or the connections between medical and financial or whatever. So, you know, it's often known by data intensive or science or fourth paradigm or big data analytics and all kinds of stuff. Types are key there, or especially the metadata that describes the types are key there. Okay, lots of words, so let's look at some pictures. So that box basically represents the digital objects created by researchers across the world over a period of time. So that does not mean that all the objects are in a single repository, but actually spread across multiple repositories with different privacies, policies, and stuff like that. There's a type registry, and presumably the types are registered in the type registry. And the type registry could also have a list of services that could cater to users or machines based on the types of the digital objects. And there is a user, and the user could be a machine or a human. So the user is now interested in a digital object. So one way to realize the power or the potential of the type registries and all of this is that this user is now trying to find out or reuse or process the digital object. So the first thing would be, you know, give me the type of the digital object. The user went to the repository, asked for the type. So the repository presumably has given back a type for the object. The user goes to the type registry and asks for more information about the type. And the type registry could actually return a list of all services that the user could use, and the user could actually pick one among the services. In this case, it's a visualization service. Then the user goes to the visualization service, and the service could actually now talk to either the repository directly for, you know, for throwing up nice charts and graphs, or the user might have submitted the data to the visualization service. So this user need not be a human user, like I said before. It could be a machine, and everything could have been automated. And it depends on the power or the how good the quality of the machine-readable metadata we could come up with for a given type. Okay, some challenges, and these challenges are based on our experience when we worked on type registry prototype for like a year or two. The first question is, if there are two digital objects, how do we know that, when do we assign the same type to those two digital objects? If the data structures used for those two digital objects match at a bit level, if you really compare those two, and if you could say with 100% probability that, you know, they match, then you can presumably assign the same type because you're really talking about the same thing. Or it could also be the case that, you know, when higher level structures or the intent for the observations are the same, then you could potentially give them the assign them the same type. For example, you have a JPEG image on your hand and or on your computer, and a PNG image on your computer. When you printed them out, it may turn out that the image is actually the same on a piece of paper. They look the same. So the question is, because they're in two different formats, are we talking about two different types for the data, or are we talking about the same type for the data? So in our experience, in the prototype that we have built, we basically said, you know, if the formats are different, then it's a different type. So we worked through that process. And it became quite cumbersome to actually deal with these variations in formats and encodings. So we never had a grasp on what we were doing. So one of the lessons that we learned is that, you know, at a cross-domain level, assign them the same type and presumably talk about the possible variations in formats at a detail level in the metadata. So that's something that we observed in our research. So basically the intent for the digital object wins over the optics, you know, the formats and the encodings. The other challenge is, you know, can a single digital object be assigned two different types? Now, you know, if you really think about it, if there are multiple types for a given object, then, you know, the whole thing would fall apart quite easily because, you know, you don't have consistency in typing and all of that stuff. But the point is, you know, a biologist might look at the data differently than a computer scientist if they are even working on the same data, because you're talking about, you know, domain-specific information versus, you know, a computer scientist who is interested in these data structures being used for managing this. So presumably there are domain-level types in place. So the point is, you know, when we come up with a cross-domain type registry, then presumably we would assign a single type, but list the various cross-domain or domain-specific types as part of the metadata. It all is going to fall into place in one more slide after this. And then, of course, the problem is bootstrapping. Let's say that the entire world has accepted the scheme that we are proposing, or somebody else is proposing, for that matter. The question is, you know, we have tons and tons of data already. Like Mike was saying, you know, about by 2020 we'd have something like 30 zettabytes of information. So how do we actually, you know, convert or typify all of the existing information? And the answer is, I don't know. I guess, you know, we can motivate people into actually typing at a project level by the funders, you know, all kinds of stuff. But that's a problem that we need to look at. So that's something that we could probably solve at a policy level, because it's a social problem, not a technology problem. So all of the challenges, except for the last one that I mentioned, have to do with what kind of metadata that should be associated with a given type. Clearly, there is a type interdependence, right? If I make an observation, and if I keep on making that observation for like 10 different time points, then there is a relationship between an observation and this set of observations, right? So presumably we can use the dependence of types. If you give a type for this one single observation, then we can possibly subtype and then assign multiple a subtype for the multiple observations. And domain-specific types. I talked about, you know, a cross-domain type would actually list multiple types here. And the question is, you know, interpretation. How can metadata help services into interpreting something, right? We could possibly come up with some subject-based classifications, like, you know, ontologies and taxonomies and all of that stuff to define how data looks like in order for services to actually process it. But at the end of the day, it's going to be quite challenging. So one of the alternatives is, instead of going down the route of subject-based classification, I don't know if you still, if some of you know about it or not, but a solution would be to come up with a pseudo-language for describing how to interpret any data. So for the various domain-specific types that we have for a given digital object, each of the domains could actually come up with a language code that would convert the data set into taxonomies that those domains have actually created. As a service, when I look at the type, I can actually decide which of the subdomains I need to pick, and then use that pseudocode for actually doing the interpretation. But so far, I've talked only about the types. Then if you take the types, then it's a matter of creating type registries. For us at CNRI, we have worked on registries for quite a while, so building a registry is not a hard problem for us. But in fact, it's quite challenging, because you have to consider several aspects, like, you know, what is the identifier system that you're going to use for the registry, how are you going to store, and what kind of indexing are you going to apply, and how do you deal with the federation of various registries that exist, and all kinds of stuff. But CNRI has been involved in quite a lot of projects and came up with metadata registries, including the ones that Hollywood actually started using a couple of years ago. So building a type registry is actually not, we would not consider a serious challenge. The problem is to come up with a definition of what a type is and what metadata would actually go with it. But anyways, so for building a type registry, we need to actually, the registry needs to support the recording of information about types and associated metadata. The registry should be capable of doing the federation across them, because we don't envision a single type registry to exist, but rather multiple depending on the domains and all of that. A deduplication engine kind of thing in order to actually control duplicate requests for the same type, and presumably some kind of moderation activity to spot any duplicate type registrations. So next steps. CNRI received Sloan Foundation funding for researching on type registries to be useful for scientific and financial communities. So we are not just talking about a single domain, but actually multiple domains. This is important for us, because we are not actually focusing on any particular problem, but rather come up with an infrastructure that would solve problems at different communities. And CNRI is quite excited about the timing of the Research Data Alliance. Because we have created a working group within RDA on type registries, and we have about 10 different folks who are participating in the working group, in the RDA working group on type registries. And these guys are from different domains with lots of expertise on different skills. So it would definitely help us clear our blind spots. So we are quite excited to be part of this working group. And in fact, Larry Lanham, one of my colleagues, is actually leading the, is chairing the working group there, or co-chairing the working group there. From a technical goal standpoint, we would want to define what do we mean by type more thoroughly than what I did today, because I posed a lot of challenges, then I actually answered questions. So hopefully with the funding money that we are getting from Sloan, we would be able to solve those problems and build and release a type registry for the community in an open source fashion in the next 18 months. That's our goal. And that's it. And thanks for having me here and letting me speak to all of you guys. And hopefully I have shared with you something of value to you. Thank you.